Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today is the day we do Mythbusters, and co-host is Chris Rossini. And Chris, you are there, I believe, and what kind of a program do we have for today?
Good morning, Dr. Paul. We're going to discuss the wild world of Washington. We had a businessman president elected to head a bankrupt government, but this businessman has decided to increase both government spending and debt. Despite these increases, his opponents are crying about unconscionable cuts. So, Dr. Paul, we're going to talk about this big perception problem that we have with government. And we'll start with the first topic, which is poverty. And that's this widespread belief that government is seen as necessary in battling poverty. Can you please explain how this is just a tool for political demagogues?
Yeah, that's all it is. I mean, the whole welfare system has been designed by those who get political benefits, whether it's the welfare to the rich or welfare to the poor. It's always sold on you're going to get a lot of benefits. But it's almost like un-American and anti-patriotic to suggest maybe the government's the problem. And right now, the Republicans are proposing some cuts way out. They're planning, I think I saw one where they were talking about having a balanced budget in 10 years or so. I mean, it's so ridiculous. But there are some token cuts on increases way out, and it's having the far left go nuts. And it's just provides this propaganda for them, the yell and scream. Republicans don't care. They're inhumane. They want to slash, food stamps and the whole work. I don't think it makes any sense in this world for the Republicans to do this other than pretend that they're appealing and appeasing their base, say, yeah, well, we want to do it. The Democrats won't let us, but we really care about the poor, and we want to cut, and we care about the economy, so we want to get the budget back in balance. At the same time, the proposal for the budget is trillions and trillions of dollars of new spending, whether it's infrastructure or the military. So it's very fictitious on what they're doing. I think politically it doesn't make sense. Economically, it doesn't make much sense. And what the liberals, what bothers me is when the liberals holler and scream about you don't care about the poor people, and you don't care about the people who really need help, and you're trying to cut spending in those areas. And that's where they're completely wrong, and they're completely demagogic in saying this, because it's policy that has created this. And people say, I can blame the government for most of it, but the whole thing is does that mean the government doesn't have a responsibility over the issue of poverty? Yes, they do. Don't mess it up. Don't mess up the economy. So they create the monster. So if they are creating harm and creating unemployment and different things, then they're responsible. And there's a lot of things that they do. But so there is something the government could do, and that is change the system that we have that has brought this to us. You know, there's a simple little story in the history of America, and this was before there was a United States, and that is the story about Plymouth Colony. When the Pilgrims came over here and Bradford set it up, they set it up as a communist socialist system. Everybody worked together. Everybody put their food and their fruits of their labor in one area, and then there was a distributor. Guess what? People didn't work in the first 2 years. The colonists were dying off from starvation until after 2 years, Bradford said, let's have private property. And they worked that, and suddenly they had prosperity, and there was not elimination of poverty. They started selling. They had so many goods that they could sell. And yet here we are back again, accepting this notion of a welfare state, which is socialistic and collectivist thinking. And they wonder why things don't get better. Right now, today, it is so bad, even though all you hear is the wonderful things going on in the stock market. There are, over 60,000, 62,000 3,000 people that are homeless in New York City. They spend over $1 billion a year on homelessness. They never think, maybe the more you subsidize something, the more you get. And that certainly has been the case. But just think of what happened since the 1960s. They declared war. That was the first mistake. And another war won't help, whether it's war in Afghanistan or a war against poverty. Well, People were delighted. Why should we let the people suffer? So our governments, our taxpayers, have been stuck with a bill of $22 trillion in the past 50 years, and it's worse than ever. There's two groups of people now, the very wealthy and the very poor, and the wiping out of the middle class, and the labor participation rate is very high, but the statistics shows that everything is okay. But there isn't. There's a division, and it has to do with poverty that we have, and the government policies have done this harm. I've always argued that most people vote not from their hearts and not from their minds. I think they vote from their bellies. People, I think, basically would like to have a good job, and they would respond to taking care of themselves, and they do vote for economic reasons, but they get so confused by the politicians and the demagogues and the false information about how economic policies work that they don't strive for this. And that is the big problem. We have to look to where poverty comes from. Of course, getting rid of the demagogues, I don't think that's going to happen until we get rid of the bureaucracy and exchange our politicians for a new group that would endorse a different form of government. That's a big if, but that's really what we need, because I think poverty is going to get much worse unless we change the role for government.
Yes, and it should not be forgotten that we have the biggest government ever, and poverty is just as prevalent as ever. So that connection needs to be made, that government is not the cure for poverty. It doesn't produce anything. It's not a producer. So while it can't fix the poverty problem, it is very capable of making it worse. So let's talk about that next, Dr. Paul. If you could talk about the Fed, taxes, and this idea of income or wealth redistribution, how it actually makes poverty worse.
Yes, and Austrian economics, especially Mises, always said that if you destroy a currency, you'll destroy the middle class. And I think that's what we're witnessing now. And then the worse it gets, the more they demand that we do more of the same thing. The war on poverty didn't work, so we spend not $22 trillion, we'll have to spend a lot more. And that is the big problem. But we've often talked about 1913. It was a very bad year for our country because it introduced the notion that the government owns all your income, and if they own your income, they'll tell you how much you can keep and under what conditions. So that's a big problem. But that wasn't enough. At the same time, they planned for the overspending and the possibility there wouldn't be enough taxes, and that is pass this off to some another group, and that is through the inflation. That is, print the money. And the system was built up to systematically undermine the gold standard, remove all limitations on government spending. The demagogues and the special interests would thrive. And early on, many of them did, and many of them still do it. But it leads to a chaotic situation that finally leads to the disintegration of the economy and the system. And that's where we are today. So the Federal Reserve permits the overspending of the politicians, and they send out the bills, and the Fed buys the debt just with money out of thin air, and this undermines the poor. And you say, well, you talk about taxes, get rid of the taxes. The poor don't pay taxes. The lower 50% essentially pays no taxes. But they do pay taxes. They pay sales taxes and they pay income taxes because of the corporation. So if any corporation provides a service to the poor in the middle class, they have to work into it the taxes that they pay, and also they have to work into it the interest they pay. Poor people don't pay interest. Usually they don't have a lot of houses to pay for, but whether it's an interest payment on the system, everything gets passed on, and therefore the poor and the middle class suffer a lot more from inflation because the consequence of inflating the money supply are higher prices. And even though the government says they're working real hard to increase the rate of prices, they want them above 2%. At the same time, if you go out and talk to people, they find out that they're squeezed. They don't have enough money at the end of the month. And I've seen some statistics to show that if there's a sharp downturn, most people, maybe like 50, 60, 70% of the people have a $500 in the bank to tide them over an emergency. And that is because the cost of living is up and they are not protected. And it all comes from this notion that government is our savior and they will take care of us. And it's sold to us for humanitarian reasons. We're going to take care of you. But what they didn't tell us when we were, when they were setting up the Federal Reserve System, that it may be designed to say, well, we're going to help protect the poor people's bank accounts, which is fictitious. But the real reason, of course, was to protect the banking systems so they would have a lender of last resort, take care of, and they needed a flexible currency. They can do anything that they want with the currency. They can interest rates for the benefit of the very wealthy. And of course, look at what Wall Street's doing. Look at what the military industrial complex is doing. Look about our operations overseas. Look about our empire. But all empires end up with poverty and unhappy people at home. And that's where we're moving toward. But there's no connection with the average person saying, you know, why I'm having a tough time. One reason is that we're constantly in wars. And that is the reason it drains our resources. Some might agree with us and say that is absolutely right. Let's take that money and pass it out. Now, I don't think that's the solution. You bring the money back home and let the people have their money. Don't take it from them. Don't interfere. Let them decide what is best. Just like at Plymouth Colony, Governor Bradford just let the people decide. And that's what caused, you know, tremendous increase in production. So we need that. But even today, we are losing our confidence and our understanding of the free market, although it's been around for a long time. Of course, one of the goals of this program is try to encourage people to study and understand how a system based on individual liberty and free markets, we can solve these problems and that we don't have to keep going backwards. And right now, we're going backwards ever since the progressives have taken over, and there's still a bunch of them around. And it's a pity that you can take a wonderful word like progressive, because libertarianism is the most progressive philosophy. I hope nobody holds that against me in the way I'm using it. It is progressive. It's advancing the cause and understanding of liberty, the understanding of monetary policy. So, but that has been destroyed, just like liberal. Liberal used to mean liberty, but now we have to try to get people to understand exactly why this progressivism in economics and in foreign policy doesn't work, and that the founders gave us a very good hint on which direction to go. But unfortunately, we did that for a while, but we certainly took a back step about 15 years ago when we grabbed hold of the progressive area, morphed into the central banking area and the Keynesian Samuelson type economic policies. And that's why we're facing these problems. And hopefully we can get the American people to understand that what they want is less government, and don't get conned into believing, oh, the government will take care of me. They'll provide my safety net, and I don't have to work, and they'll take care of me. And otherwise, there'll be so many people suffering. That'll be the whole thing. There's going to be somebody suffering. But believe me, if you look into it, you'll find that the freer society is, the less poverty is, and the more likely it is that the wealth that is produced will take care of the people who are truly needy.
Yes, the next area that government makes poverty worse. As we pointed out, government doesn't produce. It's not a creator. All wealth is created in the marketplace. Unfortunately, government has inserted itself, regulating everything down to the tiniest minutia. So even if you want to start a business or even just stay in business, you have to keep up with all the regulations that come out of Washington. So if you could talk about how the land of the free really needs free trade, and that'll help with the poverty situation.
Yeah, and that's a big issue. I'm really almost shocked that became a popular issue and actually helped to get the new administration in, that he would protect our businesses. And it sounds good, it sounds patriotic, and it sounds like it might work, but it really challenges the whole principle of how markets work, because you want free exchanges between cultures and countries, and that way you get the people who can produce at the lowest cost. And that goes along with the principle of free markets. And that is, it's designed to help the consumer. It's not designed to help the businessman make more money. It's not designed for the principle saying, well, the working man needs more money. So it's designed only to have union wages double or triple what might be the market rate. No, it's designed to help the consumer. And if you had sound money and limited government and these sorts of things, believe me, the consumer would be well taken care of. But you have to have free trade. A few decades ago, our cars were all falling apart and they were yelling and screaming, don't let the Japanese send their cars in here. But it was a blessing in disguise. The American company started to make better cars. And it turned out that all of a sudden jobs were made by Japanese companies who came here and built cars here. You know, it was because of freedom in the marketplace. And yet now there's an attack because they're not looking at the real cause of our economic crisis. They're looking for a solution, a temporary solution. They're treating a symptom by saying, well, we have to protect ourselves. And that's ongoing. And that argument is still up for grabs. They're talking about border taxes and tariffs, and it's disruptive. I've always looked at the trade issue as a moral issue, because if you're a free individual and you have a right to your life, which we claim we do, and we have a right to our liberty, which we claim we have, sometimes I wonder, that we should have a right to keep the fruits of our labor. We should have a right to keep what we earn and a right to spend it the way we want. So in many ways, the individual decides whether they want to buy a foreign car or not a foreign car or whatever. Will they take advantage of a good price and a good product? So this is the thing that people don't quite understand, that the individual has a moral right to his life, liberty, and property, and he has a right to spend his money, and it sorts this all out. If you turn it over to the special interests, then, you know, the tariffs and all become protective tariffs. You know, in theory, you know, the founders didn't come down hard on all tariffs, but they weren't not thinking about, well, we'll put a tariff on this, this, or this, and put it up higher here, punish this company, or get politically and say we're going to put on sanctions and punish a country. So I think they were thinking more that if you had a 2% import tax, you could take care of the whole government. I don't like that, but it certainly would be better than this runaway protective tariffs and getting involved with international managed trade and some of this managed trade like WTO and NAFTA and all. It's done in the name of lower tariffs, which isn't true. They just manage tariffs, and the bigger companies benefit at the expense of the smaller companies. So you want the people to be able to trade, buy what they want, where they want, unless there happens to be a legal declared war. But the other thing that is so difficult that ruins trade, of course, is when there are international conflicts and when we have too much international government. We want international cooperation, freely and voluntary. And that is a bit of governance by some rules and some morality, but it's not the governance of a world government, which is where we're moving toward.
Finally, Dr. Paul, it's a sad fact of life, but poverty, even under a pure free society, there would still be poverty. So it can't be completely eliminated, but it can be greatly reduced. And we know that the biggest government in the world is incapable of fixing poverty. It only makes it worse. So to close the show, if you could make the case for the non-aggression principle, and how, if society did adhere to such a principle, it would make a much bigger dent into poverty than government ever could.
Yes, and that's not complex, because we've talked a lot about avoiding the temptation to use aggression to have one's way. And it's accepted in many things in our society. It's accepted, in the ideas of at least to a large degree about no aggression should be used in regulating our religious, spiritual beliefs and also in what we read and study. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of government specialized aggression against us, the people, in what we put into our bodies, telling us exactly what we're allowed to eat and smoke and deal with, and to the point of preventing us from doing something that is healthful and beneficial and letting the people sort this all out. The non-aggression principle actually recognizes that people have a stake in what they do, and if they know that they have to suffer all the consequences of their mistakes, it's a different story. And it shouldn't be assumed that if there's going to be risks and problems that we need government agents and bureaucrats, they'll take care of us. It doesn't work. They take care of themselves. And the bureaucracy grows. They make a lot of money. They make a lot of mistakes. There's some maybe well-intentioned people. But the big reason for this is, in a free market, in a free society, if an individual makes a mistake, which we all will, we quickly fix it, correct it, and do something about it, but we can't go and use an aggressive government to go and take something from somebody else. So, but if you allow the people either motivated by evil or stupidity, and they end up in our government, they make a mistake. It's overwhelming, and that's why we're here suffering from income taxes, unbelievable regulations, unbelievable insults now on our right of free speech with this crazy nation of Marxism, social Marxism, telling people what is political correct or not, and what's going on in our university. It's just totally out of control. But if governments were strictly limited, the mistakes would be there. There would be some poverty. There'd be some real tragedies out there. But believe me, it would be so much better. Instead of having a whole nation wondering where they're going to get medical care in the next month, instead of us having government involvement in our medical care system for over 50 years, and much more so in these last 8 years, it's been a disaster. Medical care was readily available in my lifetime. You know, I started practicing medicine before Medicare and Medicaid, and before Obamacare, too. And I don't remember any tragedies. I don't remember people getting no care, but I do remember a lot of charity hospitals. Churches has hospitals. We still have a Shriners Hospital in Galveston that takes care of people who suffer from burns that have no money, especially the children. And if a country is much wealthier and they feel generous, just like back to the Plymouth Colony, they had people that couldn't work. There was a small number of people that didn't take advantage of their liberties because they were sick or incapable. Guess what? The others had so much prosperity, and they were Christian people, and they wanted to help, but they didn't do it when collectivism was forced on them. So that's the way it would work, but people don't understand it. They don't believe it. Some are just plain out, not only are they ill-informed about economics, they're sort of yielding to the temptation that they've won the lottery and I can be taken care of, and then the demagogues use this as a justification for more government to make sure this works. The real tragedy is that they use the poor to justify this aggressive principle of using force to sort things out. And when that aggressive principle is endorsed, which is well endorsed now, guess who benefits the most? It's the big companies. It's the big banks. They're the ones who write the tax codes, and they're the ones who endorse the central bank, the Federal Reserve System. And they're the ones right now, there are more billionaires. They're talking about now having the first trillionaire. At the same time, if you look at the labor employment rate, unemployment rate, it keeps going up. And so there's a lot of harm done, but the distraction is, they apply a principle of aggression because that's how we're going to help poor people. At the same time, it's nothing more than a deceitful ploy for the very wealthy to get wealthier and not live up to the same rules. Guess what would happen under those circumstances? There'd be no bailouts. There'd be no privileges of very, very low interest rates being given to the banks and to their customers to speculate in the stock market and do these things, while the other person has a tough time paying their bills at the end of the month. And then the endorsement and the acceptance of, well, I'm in trouble and the government's offering me these help. This is why we want progressives in government, because they're going to vote for my welfare check. And the transition is the tough one, because how do you get out of this dependency over into a system where people are self-reliant? You know, it was much easier in the second year of the Plymouth Colony. You just said, that's it. We're done with this collectivism and this socialism. You go, you're on your own, and here's your property, and here's your land. Go work for yourself. Today, it's more complicated. There's no doubt about it. And I think there should be and I talked about it, how you could work a transition. You don't attack the people totally dependent on health care as the first thing to cut. What you do is you cut the warring overseas, the billions and billions of dollars that we spend overseas, and the distraction, and then curtail, you know, the power of the Federal Reserve and the ability for them to pass out the welfare to the very wealthy. But guess what? The change is going to come suddenly, quickly, and total, not because there'll be legislation, but because this system won't last. I'm just hoping and praying that we'll have enough people who understand what freedom is all about, and they will endorse these principles that the founders talked about, and which is based on that moral principle of nobody committing aggression against another person. If you can't do something to somebody else and take what they have, you should never send and never expect your government aid, your politicians, your congressmen, or your president to go and do it for you. That's where the dilemma is, and we will have the opportunity, because this system is going to fail, and hopefully we can come out of it all right and have a much better system and move the cause of liberty along, because it's been a slow effort to develop and to get people to understand what it's all about. But I think that part of the story is alive and well. A lot more people are understanding the necessity of us being prepared for a new system, and it should be based on the moral principle of the individual rights and the non-aggression that we all should follow. Chris, I want to thank you for being with us today, and I hope we'll be seeing you next week.
I'll be here, Dr. Paul. Thank you.
All right. Very good, Chris. And I want to thank our audience for joining us today at the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.